Human culture spent, what, 10,000 years working out ways to code exciting gendered sexuality into every shirt and gesture? Our poor 3 centuries without it simply haven't had the time to develop anything to match. Her eye caught on me. It's like a language. A young, invented language with a couple thousand words might manage baby books and street directions, but Voltaire, Shakespeare, the profound peaks and doggerel troughs of literature, those take 1,000,000 words. Many of my clients find what we offer here quite addictive. Carlyle's wrinkled nose showed that he found the thought odd. So, this is all just historical reenactment? In a sense, yes, she added warmly. Although, since you ask about the forbidden, Doctor, in the intimacy of this room, I will confess there is one more borderline thing that goes on here. She caught a sparkle in Thisbe's gaze and, smiling, sparkled back, though we make sure it harms no one. You see, my guests enjoy reenactments of 18th-century intimacy, particularly the forbidden and scandalous sides thereof, not only my gendered ladies and gentlemen, but the Enlightenment art of mixing forbidden sex acts with forbidden things, especially forbidden talk. Carlyle frowned. Meaning? Oh, just the sorts of philosophical debates that were scandalous once upon a time. Equality, human rights, rational government, cultural relativism, freedom of religion, specific religious views. The sensei frowned. You're saying you discuss theology while having sex? For beginners, it's before and after, mostly. Managing it during sex takes skill and concentration. It's our unique service. Since discussing religion is even more taboo today than it was in our dear 18th century, it makes the most thrilling erotic talk. I'm sure you've run across this sort of thing before, Dr. Carlyle. Professionally, I mean. Not in so institutionalized a form, but yes. The sensei smiled almost smugly. It's what I expected, really. Oh? Your inscription, Deo Erexit Sad, built for God by de Sade. It's a bit too literate for someone who would read Sade so narrowly as to think it was all about sadism. You're using the religious half of Sade, attacking the censeur system. I would never attack the censeur system, Madame contradicted, holding a hand against her bosom as if wounded. I told you, we are very careful. What happens here is fun and play, not danger. Taboos are thrilling, and my guests enjoy breaking taboos, especially the triple mixture of sex, gender, and religion, stacking forbidden things to build a richer thrill. No need to worry about bringing this to the attention of the censeurs' conclave, they know. We have many censeurs on staff here, Dominic among them, tasked with making sure that things stay safe. And the conclave sends inspectors frequently to watch for proselytizing. Whenever it's a group of 3 or more, we have a censeur chaperone to certify the discussion non-proselytory. I believe the consensus in the conclave is that my establishment is healthy for the world. The urge to break the religious taboo is common enough, and it's better that it be concentrated here, where it's carefully monitored and directed toward harmless play, than to leave people to vent the same impulses in secret meetings or visiting reservations where you have no jurisdiction. Thisbe's smile faded as she found herself on less familiar ground. What does proselytizing have to do with the Marquis de Sade? Ask your censeur, Madame encouraged. Sade is still on the standard syllabus, is he not, Dr. Carlyle? Carlyle perked at the invitation to ply his trade. Their reputation aside, Thisbe, a lot of Sade's writings were moral and philosophical. They did precisely this taboo-breaking thing Madame is describing, mixing sex with philosophy and theology, usually by literally alternating them in the text. Sex scene, philosophy, sex scene, philosophy, and so on. Sade equated racy, forbidden sex acts with radical ideas like atheism or criticizing the king. It was a lot like that Diderot stuff about nuns that Heloise quoted, encouraging the readers to question what's meant by natural, when both celibacy and sex can be defined as perversions, depending on how you look at it. Madame's eyes beamed approval. An admirable summary, Dr. Carlyle. But our Marquis was more experimental, even than Le Philosophe. My favorite example is his proof from design. Carlyle smirked, recognizing it. But let Madame continue. Nature, according to the science and theology of the Marquise's day, makes all things to fit where they belong. Forest animals with brown fur, Arctic animals with white fur, predators with sharp teeth, herbivores with dull teeth, round pegs in round holes on a world scale. With me so far, Thisbe? Yes, she answered, cautious. And before Darwin, people used that as proof of the existence of God. Precisely. Now the penis is round and the anus is round, or the vagina's opening is long and narrow. Clearly, then, nature designed the penis to fit into the anus, not into the vagina. Thisbe snickered. That may be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Precisely, Madame confirmed. The Marquis is parodying 18th-century scientific logic. If you want to throw away his proof of the naturalness of sodomy, you must also throw away St. Thomas Aquinas's proof of the existence of God from design. Sod took all sorts of things, gender, religious and moral concepts, all by experimenting with acts, or at least descriptions of acts, which reverse those prejudices. Since in our modern day, discussing religion has become risky again, just as it was in the 18th century when anything radical could get you executed, the thrill is back too. And our dear Marquise's questions are still worth asking, even if today we have more rational laws and open-minded leaders. I see it, Thisbe conceded, then brightened. Yes, I see it. It sounds fun. Carlyle did not brighten. Why are the president and director here? He asked, looking to the VIPs who flanked them in silent approval. A nod from Ganymede invited Ando to speak first. I'm here at the moment for family business, the chief director answered. Carlyle's light brows furrowed. Family? Sparkling Ganymede glanced at the cousin, then gave Thisbe a smirk of quick judgmental humor. She smirked back. Carlyle, really, you haven't heard the rumors? He frowned. What? Tycoon. That's the nickname the Mitsubishi use for J.E.D.D. Mason, isn't it? Chief Director Ando nodded, not really smiling, but his face perhaps a little warmer now. Cardi couldn't get across to me the 15 or so things the nickname means, but Jehovah's actually your child, aren't they, Director? That's what Mitsubishi circles say, that despite being adopted by the Emperor, J.E.D.D. Mason is actually Chief Director Ando's child. Carlyle blinked, dazzled. I never believed. Then, President Ganymede, you're J.E.D.D. Mason's uncle? Duke Ganymede sighed at the sensei, as at a newcomer at a banquet who lifts the dessert fork first. Chief Director Ando has been married to my sister for 28 years. You can't expect him to publicly accept responsibility for a bastard child of 21. What an eccentric suggestion. Ando's face revealed nothing. Suffice to say, Tycoon is very dear to me, and I was glad to see my friend and colleague Cornell Mason secure a place for the child where they would have access to the very highest circles. Mason, meanwhile, has been happy to have my help raising Tycoon, since we're both such busy people. Carlyle's puzzled gaze shifted from the director to Madame, to Duke, and fixed at last on Thisbe. So, like an unofficial makeshift bash, Thisbe suggested, stretching back cat-like across the silken seat as she savored the mystery's solution. Or a marriage alliance, Madame suggested, between two royal houses. Who do you think convinces the Masons not to push too hard for a new census, even though their population's grown enough to merit another senator? Or who do you think gets the Mitsubishi not to raise rents on the rest of us when they own more than half the globe? Madame's breast within its bodice swelled with mother's pride. He's a very important boy, my son, the Prince d'Arwe, a pillar of friendship between the Masons, Mitsubishi, and humanists. A personal alliance. Thisbe is always happy to be right. So, which one gets to be called Monsieur d'Arwe, the Emperor or you, Director? Voltaire, Carlyle answered softly. What? Voltaire's real name was François-Marie Arwe, before they changed it to Voltaire. Sticking de on the front makes it sound aristocratic. It's the sort of thing ambitious women aiming to become king's mistresses used to do. Madame concealed her smile behind a fan of deep blue ostrich feathers veined with gold. If the patriarch is no longer using the name, why shouldn't I? After all, Voltaire was my inspiration, he and his age. Don't you mean Madame de Pompadour at her age? Carlyle challenged. That's what you're aiming at here, isn't it? The age when kings, mistresses ruled the world? I'm not aiming at anything, she answered, painted lashes fluttering at the suggestion. I have created a period venue where clients of a particular taste can vent their unorthodox sexual appetites. If, as a side effect, my son and I have encouraged peace and stability in the world for 2 decades, I don't expect anyone will complain. Carlyle tried to slide away from Madame along the sofa, but politeness held him mostly fast. And what about you, President Ganymede? He asked. Why are you here, paying an avuncular visit? The cousin was not worthy of the Duke's full gaze. I was born here, but I'm here now to retrieve Thisbe Sanir. He turned the murder-blue diamonds of his eyes on her. I thought you were more cautious than this, Thisbe. What if you'd been caught using the confidential data your Bash is trusted with to infiltrate a secret stronghold which I didn't happen to frequent? I'm sorry. There was frankly little apology in Thisbe's apology. Her expression was like a child's at that moment. A child clever enough to find the hiding place where Mom and Papa have secreted some stash of candy for her birthday, and she accepts their admonishments, but in the same breath reaches for her chocolate. Thisbe collects us, you see. She was born to her Bash's secrets, but she collected me, the Major, Bridger. Now, what a triple prize to set beside us in her spellbook. The President, the Chief Director, and this bizarre Madame. Thisbe, the Duke President reconquered his member's attention with a toss of his golden mane. If you are concerned about how the Prince d'Arwe was handling the case, you should have come to me directly. You know this must be handled delicately. His eyes locked on me for a stabbing instant. My trembling was my apology. Excuse me, President Ganymede, Carlyle interrupted. Did you say you were born here? Here we prefer, excuse me, your grace, Madame corrected. And yes, he was. His sister, too. Part of my dear family, born and raised here, like Dominique and Eloise and the Chevalier. Inside a brothel? The Duke's eyes locked on the censeur like a hawk about to dive. We lived upstairs. The pit is downstairs. And if you're calling my sister something vile, then there's a dueling arena downstairs where such things are settled. Carlyle's limbs withdrew into the cloak like a retreating crab. Cousin's law doesn't allow dueling. You could find a champion. Please, Your Grace, Madame intervened. We must forgive newcomers for being new. Of course. It was Director Ando who seconded Madame's forgiveness, and with such force that Ganymede had to let it go. Madame smiled it all away. Anyway, it's not uncommon for a Bash house to have a business in part of it, as yours does, Mademoiselle Sanir, your wonderful cars. Nor is it uncommon for some of a Bash's children to join the family business while others work elsewhere. Speaking of which, Mademoiselle Senir, I hear you up for another Oscar. Congratulations.